And our special guest this hour, Scott Lemriel. We're talking about his work, the SARES agenda. We're going to go back to Robert, by the way, in California. He's been on hold for a while, and he was telling us this incredible story here. So, Robert, just go back a little bit. Tell us what happened, if you would.
Sure. Basically, I think this was unbeknownst to God that this occurred. Basically, what happened is in August of 2013, the aliens from another place in the same solar system came and embedded a micro invisible chip in the back of the brain of all 700 or 7 billion plus people.
Wow.
except for me and my family. And the way you can prove it is basically you have to have some intellect, some intelligence, and some reasoning skills. But in the eyes of a human being, they've changed a little bit. And also the communication, the way that words are emitted from the mouth, is just a little bit different than if you were to, like, watch a show from 2012, Friends, compared to some of the stuff that's on TV right now. It's a minor change, but the people are, they're still human beings on this planet. We're all human beings. The main difference is that with the human beings now with the chip in their brain, I guess it can't come out. And with the chip in the brain, people cannot tolerate emotion as much as they used to. In the age of Pisces, extreme emotion was tolerable and accepted and enjoyed. Now in the age of Aquarius, with that chip embedded into their brain, conflict and dramatic emotion isn't tolerated. People have become a little bit more anally retentive when it comes to tolerance of emotion or of those kinds of norms in society, and the whole world's blinded to its own change. It's like almost like it happened in an instant, and everybody just went on like nothing happened.
That is something else. So why do you think they bypassed your family and hit everybody else?
Well, I'm the most humble guy you ever meet, but I think it's because God chose me. He calls me his son, okay? I don't like to put a name on it because here's the deal. I know everything about Jesus and evolution and all that too. And I don't want to put, I'm somewhat of an existentialist. I don't like to put a noun on somebody's name and call them something and then get typecast to something, you know? People are going to interpret what you say and put some kind of vocabulary term as a symbolism to define who you are. I'd rather people just make up their own minds than for me to give myself some kind of authority over it.
I understand. All right, let's get your take, Scott, on this. The fact that 7 billion humans, according to Robert, have been chipped, basically.
Yeah, I can understand where he's coming from. It's not necessary, in my experience, to place a chip, invisible or otherwise, in people, because the implantation process is so subtle. You wouldn't know it is being done to you. He's right about that. And that's been done all over this planet. But that's through implanting terrorizing images in the subconscious. What I mean by that is you don't feel them or see them. But when you try to penetrate past the barrier to get to who you are, to recover who you are and to know who you are, you run into a terrorizing, an artificially created terrorizing image that plays over your nervous system. You don't see it, you don't hear it, but you feel it. And it's that kind of thing that controls people. It's that kind of thing that is underway now in process to be neutralized worldwide. There's no construct good can come from it.
Scott, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment. We'll take more calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Scott Lemriel with us. Scott, in your opinion, did the Roswell crash occur of aliens?
Yes.
How do we know this?
Well, for me, it's by exploring with beings from other worlds, looking at Earth from outside, looking down on it in an objective way that's not caught up in the misinformation circulated around the world. I mean, it's something that happened, but who shot it down? Not our military.
Let's go to Roger in Hilo, Hawaii. Hello, Roger. Welcome to the program.
Hey there. So, you know, I've been participating somewhat myself in this following this ET issue. But here, there's someone that wrote a book called Galactic Diplomacy, Michael Sala. And it's just identical. He goes to the Eisenhower's meeting.
No, Michael well.
Yes. And, well, I'm participating with him somewhat in this contact to ascension. And this deals with the benevolent beings, ascended beings, and that from ascended planets. Not all the planets are ascended. Not all the ETs are ascended, but the ascended ones are the benevolent ones. And they're on a quest to ascend the planet as a whole. The Earth should be ascended, and it's not just the individuals here, but the only ones to be left are the ascended beings. The ascended beings will live on this planet as when it ascends. And there's a new universe starting where those that are still tied to the material wealth and you know, don't want to ascend, and they're being gravitated toward this new universe, and they're going to develop this new universe and have the new resources. I mean, this is supposedly in our lifetime, too. I mean, you don't have to die to ascend or anything like that. But this is the Intergalactic Board of Council, and they've decided the whole universe is to be ascended, and the Earth included, but it's just the Earth has had so much negative. They've sent down a lot of ascended beings to incarnate into the baby. Since 1945, there's been three waves. And to anchor this unconditional love, to anchor the divine and higher conscious energy into the Earth so that it can transcend and ascend, I should say.
Roger, you're going to have to tell me how you came about knowing this.
Well, there's an experiment going on, and we're starting a group here, and this is the message directly from the ascended beings being channeled to Jasana.
Ah, okay.
And it's quite an experiment going on presently to ascend an actual planet while the inhabitants are still here. So it's something new and sounds promising to me. And they're supposedly working with the ascended masters here. I mean, so it's not a contradiction between intergalactic and the Earth.
All right, thanks, Roger. And Scott, it would seem to me that with all the calls that we're getting about this and what you've been talking about for a couple hours, that something big is about to happen. Is that a pretty good guess?
That's more than a guess, George. You're spot on. Something big is about to happen worldwide. Not what people are expecting at all. Although the people that I'm in touch with from other worlds don't speak of the process as an ascension, the caller should know. I know Michael Sala, and he knows me. He's read my book. I've been invited to go to the next UFO conference there in Hawaii next year, and I'll be attending one in Norway, invited to go there.
Oh, good for you.
10th to 12th of October. All expenses paid, so that's a good thing. As I said, Michael Sala has read the book. He did a great review of the book, in fact, and put it up on his website and on examiner.com, YouTube, and that kind of thing. Great review.
All right, next up we go to Melanie in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Mel, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Good morning to you. And, Scott, I wanted to tell you that you are the best validation that I could ever have. George, I want you to listen to this man with every fiber of your being. Everything that this man is telling you is absolutely correct. These beings these 25-foot beings were introduced to me last year as a clairvoyant. I have seen them work. I have seen the good that they do. When Scott tells you that a lot of the entities on this planet were not indigenous to this planet, you can also believe that. As a clairvoyant, I learned last December, and this was a shocker for me, dinosaurs are not indigenous to this planet. They were planted here. Some of these things as a clairvoyant are just shockers to me, but I do need to pass on the things that I see, and Scott is telling you correctly. So, Scott, I hope I am as much of a validation to you as you have been to me.
Thank you. You're right about the dinosaurs, too, by the way.
Why would they plant dinosaurs here?
An experiment.
That went awry, or did it work?
No, it was on purpose. They became cumbersome and too large and would have eaten themselves to death anyway.
Did they bring the asteroid here that wiped them out on purpose, or did that just happen?
No, they arranged their extinction.
I guess they could do the same to us, Scott.
But that was in preparation to make this planet inhabitable by advanced beings.
Like the Noah flood. Did they do it, or was that a God thing?
Well, both. I mean, it depends on how you look at God, but the flood, biblical flood, and great catastrophes happened before that, were worldwide calamities, generally they come about from polar shifts. When that occurs, can you imagine... Fortunately, that's been retired, but can you imagine being alive at a polar shift, 180 degrees overnight, which would disrupt the mantle, sink it, and rise up the seafloors to create new mantles? How can you possibly find evidence for past civilizations when they're on the bottom of the seafloor now? You have to get outside of the Earth and really look with these people, down the time track, remote view, whatever way you can do it. Because the records are there and the evidence is there. But here's the thing, George. People on Earth aren't going to find it. Researchers, this great job that they've done in piecing together bits and pieces of everything. They've just done such great work. But how are they going to find a missing link or a smoking gun about extraterrestrials and have it go out to the world when they can see the whole planet from space, from satellites? They know where pockets of caverns are. They know where hidden underground chambers are. And if there's anything in any of those that might disrupt what they're trying to control or blow the whistle on the whole thing, they classify that internationally, clamp on it, and then quarantine that area so that no one can get near it. That's just common sense. And so until this change can think about it, they're not stupid. They know how to do that. When this change comes about, that kind of deception will no longer be necessary. And it won't be true for, it'll be just as true for them as it is for you or I.
Do you think that when this moment of enlightenment occurs, that it's going to be known planetary-wide?
Yes. Can't be
done it. Do you think wars will stop and things like that?
Yes. 6.5 billion people are scheduled to be relocated, not killed, because a normal human planet has 500 million. Ecological reasons, balance, spread out, lots of space, lots of freedom. This is not a normal place in that regard. If they're predicting there's going to be double that by the year 2022, that's not sustainable. So we need that change.
Let's go to Toby in Augusta, Maine. Thanks for holding, Toby. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. Glad to get on. I'm just going to ask a few questions and take my answer off the air.
Sure.
Would you say that ETs are not exactly the stereotypical thing that people are thinking of? And number two, if all evil is to be purged from the world, who or what decides what exactly the definition of evil is?
Let's take that one first, the evil question.
Okay. Anything that represses a person's ability to know who they are as a being, not the body, and their conscious knowing of their place in the universe and the place they can best creatively contribute to that, anything that represses that is evil. And what was his other question?
Well, the other question is the ETs, the stereotype, the ETs.
Most of them are not anything like people think they are.
I mean, I've never heard of the 20-footers before.
Oh, well, there's certainly skeletons that have been found that are that tall and taller, human, by archaeologists. And as soon as they discover it and announce it, then all of a sudden it goes quiet. You don't see them. They don't get toured around the world through like the Egyptian mummies do because they become classified. That's it. So the only way to really verify this stuff is to go inside, go through that door, and explore it for oneself.
Okay, we go to James in San Antonio, Texas. Go ahead, James. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. This is the first time I've actually listened, although I may have listened when I was in high school back in 98. I'm not sure if the same show, but an amazing topic. I'd like to ask my main question, and if you have time, a small secondary follow-up question. But my main question is, from what I understood about what has been talked about so far in the last hour, that humans have been seated here. We didn't evolve here 500,000 years ago. The surface was destroyed. Why is it that the human genome shares over 90%, depending on what study you listen to, or read, over 90% of our genetic code with chimpanzees and such that whose fossil records date back millions of years, well before the 500,000 year mark that has been said. And if you have time after that, I'd like to ask a second question, but it's up to you.
Okay, go with the first one, Scott.
Okay. If you look at the animal life and human life on this planet, the genome structure, the DNA, is common everywhere in creation. Not just in this parallel this dimension, but in many parallel dimensions on many world systems. It has a common ancestry or source, but none of it originally evolved here. The original, much of the life that's here and the great abundance of plant life and insect life and whales and dolphins and monkeys and carnivore animals and just the bird numbers is so staggering. Much of that was brought here during different colonizations, doing different kinds of experimentation or exploratory science under a treaty over a very long period of time. Planet's, what, estimated to be 4 billion years old? And dinosaurs went out about 55 million or so. And in that time since then, what has been going on this planet when human beings could live here without dinosaurs? That is a hidden history that everyone has a right to know, and they can know it.
Okay, and we're going to hit this break, and we'll come back to you, James. We'll get the second part of your question in just a moment. Scott's book, again, The Sayres Agenda, is available at his website, which is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And by the way, join the thousands, hundreds of thousands of people now who are liking us on Facebook by simply going to our website, coasttocoastam.com, far right-hand corner, click Facebook, and off you go. And also follow us on Twitter. We'll be back with final questions in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk a little bit about Fukushima and how it affects all of us. And then Barbara Hand Cloud joins us as we talk a little bit about astrology and how it affects us as well. And we're going to come right back in just a moment and take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Now, welcome back. Scott is with us here. And, Scott, let's go back to James in San Antonio, Texas, to finish up. Go ahead, James.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Sure. My second question is not directly related to the first, but I was on my ride home after my shift tonight. I was very interested about the comment about the psychic powers that we have lost. Originating from our pineal gland. I'm wondering, since we've lost those powers, but that gland remains, what does it do now? Is it related to that psychic function? What is its function now since it's still in the brain?
Yeah.
It's not too much. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, no, it's not that you've lost any of your higher abilities as a normal human being. It's that they've been shut down genetically. And the thing of it is, anything that can be shut down can be turned back on by the same technology. So if it's applied by benevolent beings, the reverse occurs. It's not that any of this is lost. It's not that it's permanently gone from you or anyone else or any one of us. It's still there. It still functions. Most of us pick it up as intuition, dreams at night, and things like this. But when it's fully restored, then people can go out of their body, can go into where they go in their dreams at night, create a bridge from there, and bring all that back here, which, of course, benefits everyone else because that's a constructive thing.
And, of course, a pineal gland still creates and makes melatonin, which your body needs. It's almost like your clock.
Exactly, and there's also rods and cones in the inside surface of it, like your iris, connected directly to the optic nerve. But it's their design, the clear liquid in it normally gets calcified. Put fluoride in water, for instance. And Stalin did that, Hitler did that to dumb down people who were in the prison camps. And fluoridated water is not good because it clouds that water. So if you're trying to look through the frequencies in that raw, that pineal gland, they get clouded. You can't see. A thing that really helps remove that is just a little drop of iodine from one of these health food stores and seaweed, kelp, things like that, a miso soup, because it will clear that out.
Scott, when they left this planet, have they given you a reason why they went and fled?
Who? Which ones?
The 20-footers.
Oh. Yeah, but see, when they first had a presence influencing races that came here, that was a long time ago. So they actually were the fathering tribes, you might say, fathering sponsors of the ancient Lemurians, Atlanteans, and things like that. There was direct ET involvement in those cultures. In fact, there's been direct ET involvement of good or bad sorts throughout our history, and then throughout a history people don't even know about. So their return is happening because they recently went through their own uplifting transformation. They're very evolved, which put them back on a road to actually care for the younger beings in the universe again and not just leave them out there dangling all this time, which is what happened. So they're part of the entire collective nature of beings, part of this underlying force that underlies all life. And what they're doing is being sponsored from something higher than them. So it's coming down from above and then disseminating out through them, out to the benevolent races, and then eventually right here to Earth.
We go to Greg in Stevens Point, Wisconsin now. Greg, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey. Hi. I have a story regarding my experience with extraterrestrials.
All right. What happened?
Okay, so I was sleeping one night, and I had to get up really early for my shift at Walmart, and this, like, blue light shined down, and this really loud screeching noise happened, and I guess my main concern is, like, if they're so interested in contacting us, why do they always try and do it so late, and when we have to work the next day, or...
Yeah.
Well, I would have to say the reason for that is a practical one. In that, if you think about this, if there were 10,000 ships, mile-long cylindrical ships and all the scout class craft with pilots trained to go on a mission here, and there's 7 billion people here, and millions of them deserve to get a ride or experience for themselves the truth about extraterrestrials. If you think about it, the logistical operation alone to carry out one single landing of a ship safely, when there's conflicting forces here, pick someone up, take them aboard, bring them back, drop them off, and not be detected is huge. So a lot of people don't understand that. Their primary concern is about saving the whole planet and all the people, not so much about giving rides. But that will be increasing in the days to come as more and more of this presence is beginning to make itself known here.
Were there any races on the planet, Scott, that were aware of these extraterrestrials years gone back?
Oh, absolutely. Sumerians, we know about that. The Egyptians, Babylonians, Mesopotamians.
Atlanteans, what about them?
Lemurians, yeah. Before them, sure. In those days, there was direct interrelationships with them. It was open. So those cultures were built with extraterrestrial technology and involvement.
Let's go now to the island of Kauai in Hawaii. Gary's with us west of the Rockies. Hey, Gary, thank you for calling. You're with us?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can now.
Okay, thank you. About an hour ago, Scott was looking for a word, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, and it has to do with Alzheimer's, even though I have some timers. Was it possibly dementia? No?
I think I was looking for Alzheimer's. Yeah, okay. I did say it, okay. But I wasn't sure somehow.
Yeah, you already had said that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you made a comment, and you used the word existentialism also within, you know, the last hour. And existentialism in relation to, like, Jean-Paul Sartre or a different variation thereof?
It was another caller that mentioned the existentialism.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then, let's see, the pineal gland that's possibly interrelated with the third eye?
Yes.
Okay. And then if you were to, in letter writing, the chant, would you spell it out? If you were referring it to somebody, would you spell it like H-U-E, like in colors and stuff like that, and you just roll on with a U-E really hard?
No, just H-U. And even the word Hugh, like a person's name, Hugh, it sounds like that, but it's just H-U. And it just connects a harmonic frequency. It only does one thing, and it's only benevolent.
How long do you have to Hugh?
Oh, I would say 10 or 15 minutes. Sit in some place, lie on a bed, in a couch.
Okay.
Get quiet, right? And then close your eyes, put your attention slightly above between the eyebrows. You don't look up there with your physical eyes. And then you imagine in the screen of your imagination, just like if you're imagining a loved one or something you adore, and you start hewing. You don't try to think about anything or make anything happen. You just look and listen on the inner. And then when this inner eye, this third eye, starts to activate, through the sensors in the pineal gland, you begin to see and know and perceive things directly that are out there in the great cosmos.
Let's go to Morgan in Boise, Idaho. Another caller there, first-time caller. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, George. Hey, Scott.
Hi.
You know, have you ever heard of Ekinkar? Q is what Ekists chant.
Yes.
Sure have.
But that's not why I'm calling. I had a sighting of my own here near downtown Boise. About 5 days before you visited the Egyptian, George.
Okay.
Yeah, I went out on my balcony and looked into the western sky, and I saw a black triangle illuminated with lights on the edges with two little strips of light under each triangle point, and it was just sitting there. It was completely silent. It was about, I'd say, between 2 and 3 blocks away. About the size of about the Capitol Dome, for those that don't know how big that is, it's probably about a 2 to 3 story building. And I took it in, and I looked at it for a few seconds, and then it started to turn to the northeast, like maybe it had sensed that I had seen it. And it disappeared for a split second, and then the illumination lit up again, and then it receded and got really small really fast and was gone in a blink. It had an ethereal quality, kind of otherworldly. And I was excited because it's my first sighting, so it's always neat to have proof for yourself.
Sure is. It's always neat to have that kind of sighting.
How did you feel?
I just felt a sense of wonder and awe. I wasn't worried at all about it.
That's good.
Kind of an honor to have seen it.
Well, I take it based on what you've been saying tonight, Scott, we're going to be seeing more and more of these things.
You are. Most definitely.
Do you see disclosure coming from governments at all?
Not that they're intending it. They're intending a false disclosure, but that's not what's going to happen. I think one of the callers talked about a worldwide radio thing or transmission. Mm-hmm. When people's repressed consciousness has changed enough, then you'll have the leaders of this world announcing it alongside ETs. That's going to be an event.
Like in tandem.
Right. live.
That'll be huge.
Huge. Major earth-changing forever.
How many of our presidents know what are going on? Truman, you talked about, and Eisenhower.
Truman certainly did. He was a great admirer of industrialists, by the way, put him in power. Eisenhower was a different person. He was genuine. I mean, he really cared. And I'm not saying Truman didn't, but he's very caring about his position to run in service as president. In his last year, he watched the power of the president as he stripped away from him. And his, you know what his parting speech was, right, George?
Yep. Oh, yeah, about the industrial military conflict.
He did best he could to try to let people warn people about that growing power because he watched forces strip that away. So, you know, not all the presidents are in the know of that.
They said Kennedy was killed because he possibly was going to reveal information about UFOs.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Yeah. And his brother.
Let's go next to Gasper in Hunter, New York. Gasper, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, hello. Hi. Scott, I was wondering, I come across a documentary by a woman named Grace Powers. It's called Monkey Blood. And it's very long, but it says that the Greek mythology wasn't actually mythology. It was real. Like how, you know, you're saying these people who are 20 feet tall, they were from another planet. They came here, and what they did was they mated with rhesus monkeys to create us, a smaller version of them. And the reason why we have, like, some people who are A-positive or A-negative type blood, or, like, B-positive, B-negative, well, the positive means that it's rhesus. You have a closer connection to the rhesus monkey from the breeding, and the people who are negative, who are like the minority in the world, to the small population, those are the ones who are closest to the actual, aliens who are 20 feet tall. They have a closer connection to them, and they don't, like a lot of those people, they don't feel like they are part of this world. They feel like they're out of place. Sometimes when they enter rooms, they disrupt the electricity and make the lights turn on and off. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, let's see how I would answer that. I would say that human beings are not, I could see how people could draw that analogy, but they're not derivatives of any relationship with mating with monkeys. In fact, on the other hand, I would put it the other way around. That monkeys and other species came out of advanced human beings and doing experimentation on lower life forms. It puts a reverse spin on the whole thing, but it's more accurate.
Remember the Mayan calendar date, Scott?
You bet.
So many people expected something significant to happen, and it just didn't.
No.
I even thought we'd probably have some kind of solar event. I still think we will, but
yeah.
I missed that date as well.
Yeah.
Any kind of tie-in with anything here?
Yeah. The Mayan calendar, the Mayans, mostly, I think there's maybe 500 of them, the original shamans, mostly in Guatemala, that actually know how to read their own calendar, have been saying to people for years that there was nothing in their calendar about an Armageddon in the world. That was people who went down there, archaeologists who had a biblical background, tried to squeeze it into Bible prophecy. It doesn't fit. They actually say that the end of the Mayan calendar, which ended on December 21st, 2012, that's one date people talk about, begins a new calendar. And they say that what they know is coming is the end of evil as an experiment on Earth. They don't know what form it will take, but they know it with certainty. And if they try to tell people that, who's going to listen to them?
Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Kiros is with us. Hi, Kiros.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sure can.
Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering what Scott's opinion is of the Ekankar religion and their role in all of this.
Do you have an opinion on that at all, Scott?
Yeah, I've been a member for 34 years.
Well, then I guess you should have an opinion.
They are the main proponent that puts out this word Hugh, I would have to say that. And they do have courses in training people about bilocation, out-of-body travel, things like that, to get a handle on this stuff. But the Hugh itself is not copyrighted by them. They don't own it, nor does any religion on earth or any power. It was imported here. And it is a benevolent thing that only connects people with benevolent change for the better in their life.
This Hugh again, and I want to come back to that before we wrap things up. Mm-hmm. People should do it for about 10 minutes, you say?
10 to 15.
Every day?
Yeah, if they can, at a time that's convenient. Usually better to set a time because it sets up a rhythm, particularly with the pineal gland and with help from beings that are out there that are capable of helping people. And there are countless millions of them. It sets up a rhythm, and if you do it for 10, 15 minutes, you'll notice a phenomena. As you're doing it and you relax and you let the breath go out and you pause a while, you just look and listen. Then you hew again, you feel it, you get uplifted, your heart opens. Then you hew again, and you just do this, looking and listening, ask to be shown truth, revealed hidden truth, whatever you want to put in there. And then you'll notice that for some reason you'll just know to stop. It's like a phenomenon. You'll just know.
You can feel it, can't you?
You can feel it very, very concretely, and then you just go about your business. And the next day you do it again. And if you do that over a period of, say, up to 30 days, definite experiences will come your way that are of an uplifting, benevolent nature.
Sure. Scott, thank you so much. You seem very grounded. It's called the Say Raise Agenda. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.